Let us pause. O God, make sense of your words to us, that we may take them in, that we may digest them, that they may be helpful and useful for us in the week ahead. So may all that we say and do be glorifying to you, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. God frequently brings people into our lives at various times for various reasons. A lot of times it's not on our own choice, but God's choice. I was reading a new book by Lillian Daniel. She's a pastor. And in it, she was reflecting on what was said by Jesus 2,000 years ago when he said, "You are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church." I don't know if all the disciples were happy about his choice, Jesus' choice, because Peter was often impulsive and quick to speak and acted before thinking. But Daniel, in her book, came to the conclusion and made the statement, "You people are stuck with one another." In other words, the disciples were stuck with Peter. This past week, the Vatican named a new Peter, Pope Francis, Jorge Mario Bergoglio from Argentina. I imagine most of the Catholics are happy with this decision, maybe some are not, but whether or not, they are stuck with him. His beliefs, his statements, his style, his decisions that he will make from this point forward. But not only Catholics, but non-Catholics are also stuck with him, for we can't ignore him. Whether we are influenced by what stance he takes or whether we react against him and them, we are affected. When the announcement was made that the present pope was stepping down, then leading up to the vote and during the vote itself, we were anxiously awaiting the outcome. Who will it be? We were curious. We were interested. We were affected. And so now you people are stuck with one another, as Daniel says. Jesus was sort of saying the same thing in John chapter 12 with regard to Mary. In John chapter 12, Jesus is at the home of Lazarus and Mary and Martha in Bethany. And there is also mention of Judas and Jesus and, of course, the other disciples. And this story, this episode, is like what happens in the church all the time. It reflects a slice of the church community, the Christian family. People find themselves thrown together, sometimes mismatches in a motley crew, but are called to coexist. Let's take a look one by one who these people are. First, there is Martha. Now, Martha's personality is well documented. Martha is the proverbial busybody worker. And in every church, you can find a Martha. The church could not run without the many Marthas that we have. Those who cook or clean or set up or tear down. Those who are always moving around on the go. The movers and the shakers. In Luke chapter 10, there's an episode where Jesus is at their house and Mary is there at his feet listening to him while Martha is doing her thing, scurrying around. And Martha is annoyed at her sister Mary because Martha is anxious, she is impatient, she is kind of hyper, or you could say high-strung, while Mary is sitting and still. She is prayerful, she's attentive, she's listening, she's learning, she is connecting with the truth. She is in that moment, resting in that special time that Jesus is speaking. And the interesting thing is that Jesus praises her for sitting still. Now, there are those of us who have a hard time sitting still. Now, I'm not talking about, but Jesus praises those who are sitting still. Now, I'm not talking about if you're sitting still in church and sleeping, but if you are genuinely listening or open or trying to hear God's voice or trying to receive God's message. It is a spiritual discipline to sit still and wait on the Lord. Psalm 37 says, "Be still before the Lord and wait patiently." Or Psalm 46 says, "Be still and know that I am God." Or Isaiah 40 that says, "Those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles, and they shall run and not be weary." These people are a contrast to those in church who cannot sit still. Some people have to be doing something. Sometimes even during the sermon, cannot sit still. Sometimes I notice those who are wandering in the lobby or checking the phones or whispering. Or maybe those who can't sit still are in the kitchen somewhere preparing refreshments. Maybe those who can't sit still will volunteer to teach Sunday school. But Lillian Daniels says she gives credit to those people who work behind the scenes to create a space for other people to sit still. And so Martha is making things happen, making it possible for Mary to sit still. Now, speaking of sitting still, there's Lazarus. Remember Lazarus in chapter 11? He was ill and he passed away and they buried him in the tomb, and Jesus shows up later and calls him out. But now this is chapter 12 after. But we don't know what Lazarus says before or after that instance. We don't know what Lazarus's personality is like because there's no record in the Gospels. We might guess that he's a quiet personality, that he's humble and faithful and present and quietly participating. And we have those people in church too. Then we have Mary in Luke 10 as she was sitting still, but in this story, she is not sitting still. What is she doing? She took some very expensive perfume and anointed Jesus' feet and wiped them with her hair. There is a strange theological perspective of serving and starting from the feet. Some people start with the head, with the intellect, with the mind. Some people start with the emotion, with the heart, with the passion. But there is this interesting sub-theme which works from the feet, where Jesus washes the disciples' feet. Or after the resurrection, the disciples in Matthew 28 bow down and take hold of his feet and worship him. Or Jairus, who falls down at Jesus' feet and asks for mercy. Or the unnamed woman in Luke chapter 7 who kisses his feet. Lillian Daniels says that many times pastors visit people in the hospital and they are at the foot of the bed, ministering from the very bottom base level to the rest of the body. It's a different kind of humility and intimacy. Intimacy, I mean to be authentic vulnerability or a respect or of a purity of intent and transparency. There is no selfish motive. There's no appearance of selfishness. Mary's actions are hands-on and up close, even to the point of her hair getting involved. A humility and a vulnerability that kind of makes us uncomfortable. Mary's ministry was done very generously and extravagantly. As the perfume filled the room, you could not help but notice. If you didn't know what was going on, the perfume somehow would pervade you till you would be drawn to that intimate moment. Finally, there's Judas. What is Judas's reaction? Well, Judas is criticizing Mary. He criticizes Mary's ministry. He criticizes her use of the resources. He is bringing out the negative side of it all. And at times, we have to suppress the Judas in each of us, because we face the temptation to be a naysayer or a criticizer or to question in a very unhelpful way. In fact, Judas doesn't just criticize her, but he condemns her acts of kindness and love. Whether we become like Judas or whether we end up being on the receiving end of someone like Judas, this passage, this story is true of the church. There will be someone who will complain, why are we doing it that way? Why are we spending our money that way? Jesus says to Judas, leave her alone. Now, how do we interpret that? When he says to Judas, leave her alone, could he mean, you know what, Judas, you're stuck with her and we're stuck with you, leave her alone, get along, try to understand each other, or as Rodney King said, can't we all just get along? She bought the perfume so that she might keep it for the day of my burial. What an interesting statement there. Jesus lets her take that expensive perfume, pour it on his feet, and spill all over the ground. Did she really intend to use it for his burial? Could she have known that he would die soon? And in her advanced planning, said, I'm going to buy this for his burial? And even if she did know, did Jesus know her thoughts about why she bought it? Did he fully know her intent? Or did Jesus just make some suggestion? In other words, his statement was a direction, a redirect of what she did. I would believe that she didn't anticipate his death, nor did she buy that perfume for that purpose, but Jesus is redirecting her statement to give further value to what she has done. Maybe he's saying, wait a minute, what she is doing has great benefit for the future down the road. And so Jesus is casting her good deed to be helpful and useful to extend her goodness beyond what she was possibly imagining. Why does God bring particular people in our lives, especially when they are so different or so opposite of us? To learn about ourselves? To learn about what can be different about ourselves? To be challenged. James chapter 1, 22 says, be doers of the word and not only hearers of the word. In the beginning part, Mary was a hearer, and later she became a doer, and she did so intimately and generously, hands-on, and that is what ministry is supposed to be about. Mary was a challenge to Martha. Mary was a challenge to Lazarus. Mary was a challenge to Judas. Mary was a challenge to Jesus. Ministry intimately and generously is a challenge. To be a hearer and then to be a doer, that's the challenge before us. Are we going to accept that challenge? I invite you to Ponder those thoughts and be a doer instead of just a hearer. Amen.